Welcome to the Springer Math Podcast. In this month's podcast, our guest is Yonghui He, fellow of the London Institute for Mathematical Sciences, professor of mathematics at City University of London, Cheng Xing, chair professor at Nankai University in Tianjin, as well as lecturer at Merton College, University of Oxford. Yonghui He studied at Princeton University, where he received his Bachelor of Arts in Physics with a certificate in Applied Mathematics and a certificate in Engineering. He then obtained a certificate in Advanced Mathematics at Cambridge University with distinction. He went on to receive his PhD in Theoretical and Mathematical Physics from MIT and continued at the University of Pennsylvania before joining Oxford University as a FitzJames Fellow in Mathematics and then UK STFC Advanced Fellow in Theoretical Physics. Professor He is a mathematical physicist working on various interfaces between geometry and theoretical high-energy physics. He is particularly interested in aspects of algebraic geometry in application to and interacting with gauge theory, as well as string theory, such as Calabi-Yau manifolds, holographic correspondences, and string phenomenology. He is author of over 200 scientific publications and also is a keen communicator of science. He will be hosted by Daniel Wang, Associate Editor for Mathematics in Beijing.
Hi, Yan. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, so let's first start with your research. You are a mathematical physicist. So particular areas do you focus on in this field?
I guess my main focus is on the intersection between string theory and quantum field theory. That's on the physics side. And algebraic geometry and differential geometry, and sometimes even number theory on the mathematics side.
Yes, and I also noticed that you are not only working on the interface between these subjects, as well as how artificial intelligence and machine learning help with these problems. So could you give us some examples on this topic?
Yeah, sure. So this is something I got into about 5 years ago in 2017. Actually, I was very lucky to have written one of the first papers in bringing artificial intelligence into mathematics and into theoretical physics. So the reason I got into this was, you know, because I was working on the intersection between string theory and quantum field theory and geometry, one of the biggest problems in this area, a theoretical problem, is to decide which geometry gives the right, you know, sort of reduction of string theory, which is a high-dimensional theory of everything, a theory of quantum gravity, how to reduce such a theory to our four-dimensional world. So you have to search through the space of high-dimensional geometries. And the interesting thing is, you know, the higher the dimension, the more possibilities there are of such geometries. So a class of these geometries is called Calabi-Yau geometry. We already know there are not just hundreds and thousands, but billions upon billions, 10 to some high number of these things. So there's a big sort of what I call the big data of possible universes. And given such treatment of big data, I naturally was thinking about how to use machine learning and artificial intelligence to try to study the search space of the possible landscape. And so that's kind of interesting. So in 2018, I wrote a textbook actually with Springer, just summarizing this development. It's called, you know, the Calabi-Yau landscape from geometry to physics to machine learning, trying to bring all these areas together.
What do you mainly focus on that book?
So that's a book where it starts with an introduction which tries to cover the history since the late 1980s of why physicists got into modern geometry in the sense of algebraic geometry, and why physicists are interested in things like Calabi-Yau manifolds or Kähler geometry and complex geometry, things that, you know, this community usually doesn't think about. So this is something that started in the 1980s with people like Witten and Candelas and Horowitz and Strominger and these people and Hall. And then, so that's the historical overview. And then what physicists started doing is to actually create huge databases of such geometries. This is something, you know, the pure mathematicians at the time would never think of doing something like this because, you know, pure mathematicians are interested in proving theorems and studying abstract structures. But physicists are interested in actual examples. So a huge collaboration, which lasted about, you know, 10, 20 years of physicists across the world trying to bring, you know, just actually create and catalog these geometries case by case. And, you know, they're to date now, they're gigabytes to terabytes of data. So then we go to the modern era. So that's just since 2017. So we've been looking at how to actually use modern data science techniques like machine learning and the genetic algorithms and stuff like that to try to study this huge and vast theoretical data.
I see. So when did you pick the mathematical physics as your research direction? Is there a turning point that you made up your mind to take it as your lifelong career?
That's a really interesting question. I think as a kid, like many other kids, I was just absolutely fascinated by Einstein. I think he was my hero as a child. And so I think as far, you know, for as long as I can remember, you know, since my early teenage years, I wanted to do mathematical physics in the style of, you know, of this tradition of Einstein and Bohr and Hawking and all these people. These are all very inspirational heroes of mine. So I guess, you know, I chose this direction purely as a gesture of hero worship because it's kind of very interesting. I've since drifted much, much more to the pure mathematics side. Because I think over the years, I realized that deep down, I'm much more of a mathematician than I'm a physicist. I don't think in the kind of intuitive way that a physicist does trying to understand the world, but I've been over the years getting much, much more interested in the structures of proofs and the structure of mathematics itself. So it's kind of interesting if gone from one end, worshipping heroes like Einstein to now worshipping heroes like Hilbert and Terence Tao and these people.
Yes, indeed. I think Einstein is also an idol of my childhood. So in your opinion, which are the most challenging open problems in this field, in the mathematical physics?
It's actually a very, very interesting era for mathematical physics in general, because I think that is probably the biggest contribution of string theory to, you know, as an intellectual field. You know, of course, string theory came out as a theory of everything, trying to quantize gravity and try to unify this dream of Einstein's to come up with a unified framework where quantum mechanics and general relativity can meet. So that was the original physics motivation. But I think now, certainly to me, and also to a lot of the people, a lot of my colleagues, this is by far not the most interesting and most impactful influence of string theory. So what string theory has done in an almost unprecedented way is to bring more and more pure mathematics and physics together to solve each other's problems. So for example, you know, like when physicists were doing things like counting instantons in string compactifications, they chanced upon this entire new field called enumerative geometry, which is, of course, known to the mathematics community, but physicists have now given a completely new set of techniques to solve problems in enumerative geometry. And these methods are called, you know, mirror symmetry and this kind of ideas. And vice versa, there's this reverse dialogue of using the cutting edge mathematics to bring them into physics. You know, things like, you know, cluster algebras and representation theory, and you know, a study of combinatorial polytopes. And I think that's why this particular field is interesting. I guess this field can basically describe as stringy math. It's because in no other field of theoretical physics has there been so much dialogue. And this dialogue, I think, is very, very important of using physics to solve pure problems in pure mathematics and bringing new ideas of pure mathematics into the structure of quantum field theory. And this is rather unique in the past few decades.
So actually, in your explanation, string theory is like a bridge between the pure mathematics and the theoretical physics.
Yes, that's right. So I think, you know, Edward Witten, so who is certainly one of the greatest theoretical physicists of our time, and he's the only physicist to ever get the Fields Medal. So he's sort of the champion for this stringy idea. And so he described at the turn of the 21st century, so at the end of the 20th century, he described string theory as a piece of 21st century mathematics that accidentally fell into 20th century physics. So that's actually very, very interesting. So whatever this field is doing, it's tapping into something of the future. And I think nobody can dispute with that. I mean, you know, people can dispute whether opinions vary in the physics community, whether string theory is the theory of everything, because then there is no experimental evidence in any way. And for me, you know, I originally started string theory trying to pursue this direction, but I rarely think about this problem. I hardly ever think about, you know, is string theory trying to quantize gravity? That's not what I've been thinking about for decades. Even starting from my PhD, I stopped really thinking about this problem. I was much more interested in what kind of mathematics and what kind of new mathematics and what kind of new physics can actually talk to each other. And I think that's a much, much more interesting problem for me.
Sounds really interesting. So you already did a lot in string theory. Is it your favorite research area?
I'm pretty agnostic. So I mean, because deep down I'm just a very, very curious and very, very naive mathematician. So wherever there's an interesting problem, there's an interesting structure, I tend to work on it. So I have many, many projects at any one time. So for example, I'm working on with a collaboration with IBM on quantum computing. I know very little about it, but it produces very interesting mathematics for me to play with. I also work with pure number theorists. Just because it's fun, and you know, and sometimes I work with pure algebraists or representation theorists because there's fun problems, and sometimes I work on problems in from quantum mechanics or wherever there's interesting mathematical structure, I'm just drawn to it. Mm-hmm.
Indeed, I think curiosity will create a lot of possibilities.
Yes, absolutely. I hope so.
Well, looking at your education and research background, I could see you have experienced almost all over the world. Can you please share your thoughts pointing out how you benefit from your international education and research experiences?
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, yeah, exactly as you say, you know, I've lived sort of about a quarter of my life in a different continent each. So the first quarter of my life was in China, where I was around about, I grew up and I was born in Anhui in China. And I was there till about age 9 or so, during primary school. And then I went to Australia with my parents to do my middle school and high school. And then I went to America to do my university education and above. And then I moved to the UK for my permanent position. And so I think the one great thing about this, I mean, it's really almost exactly a quarter each. What it gives me is like I really find my I really identify myself not only as a citizen of the world emotionally, but I think I also identify myself a citizen of the world intellectually. Because of this kind of experience, I think one of my favorite things, and I think is certainly if you wish one of my sort of strength. In some yeah. sense, is to be able to fit into any group, and I mean that, you know, in a social and intellectual sense. So I think because of this kind of experience, you know, as somebody once described me, I think it was the old warden of my college in Oxford. She described me as somebody who's 100% Chinese and 100% English, and possibly 100%. I mean, it's just like in any group, I'm always in. And in and out, if you wish, if you see what I mean. I'm always the outsider and always, but, you know, people kind of accept me. I think intellectually this did play a very big role for me. And maybe this is why I do this interdisciplinary stuff, because mm-hmm. sort of different communities kind of like having me around. But, you know, the way I say it is to a mathematician, I'm a physicist. To the physicist, I'm a mathematician. And to the mathematics and physics community, I'm now a artificial intelligence person and to the artificial intelligence person and my mathematical physicist. This way, for me, it's both I'm accepted by the community, but I'm also the outsider. So they kind of simultaneously tolerate my ignorance and also maybe like sometimes my different viewpoint.
I see. It's really interesting. It sounds like you are 100% insider when you are in the group, but also 100% an outsider when you're observing the group.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a curious position to be in.
Interesting. And besides benefits you obtained from this experience, do you encounter any difficulties?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's also a part of the difficulty because you're always the outsider. Much as you can be the insider, but you're always the outsider. I mean, at some level. But the difficulty, I think, for me, intellectually, is to learn the language. I have to adapt to try to say, what is the language that computer scientists actually use? I mean, how do I communicate to them? What words should I use to try to be maximally clear about what the kind of problems we're interested in? And, and every other possible combination. Physicists use a language that mathematicians usually don't understand. Mathematicians use a language that physicists don't usually understand. I think it's very nice to be the translator, but it's a very difficult job. But I enjoy it. It's like working for the UN.
Interesting. So you have roles in several institutes, and one of them is the chair professor at Nankai University.
Yeah.
And you carried out some activities at both School of Physics and Chern Institute of Mathematics in Nankai.
Yeah.
Can you give the audience a brief insight in the foundation and activities of the Chern Institute?
Yeah, sure. Pleasure. So Professor S.S. Chern, or Chen Xingsheng, is, of course, one of the greatest mathematicians and geometers of the last century, and in fact, probably of all time. So he was born in 1911, and he passed away in 2004. So Professor Chern did his undergraduate in Nankai University at the turn of the 20th century, and then he moved on to do his doctoral and postdoctoral stuff in Germany, and then became professor in Berkeley, and also Chicago and Princeton. But towards the end of his life, he moved back to China to his alma mater, which is Nankai University. And by the appointment of the Ministry of Education in China, he founded the Institute of Mathematics at Nankai University. And this was in 1985. And he remained the director, the founding director of this institute until 1992. And interestingly, his very, very good friend and another great legendary figure in physics and mathematics, Professor C.N. Yang, or Yang Zhenning, who got the Nobel Prize in 1957. So Professor Yang was born in 1922. And he founded within this Institute of Mathematics in 1986, so shortly after, the Theoretical Physics Division. So from the very beginning, in the mid to late, starting from the mid to late 1980s, this institute became sort of a focal point of discussion and dialogue. That's the most important thing, dialogue between different branches of mathematics and between mathematics and theoretical physics. And in fact, as you enter the institute, there is a giant mural, I think in Chinese porcelain, of capturing a moment of a conversation between Professor Chern and Professor Yang, just talking. It covers the size of a wall. It's a very touching and very personal portraiture of two great giants of mathematics and physics. So when Professor Chern passed away in 2004, the Chinese ministry, of course, immediately renamed this institute as the Chern Institute of Mathematics. So that was the beginnings of this CIM. So that was it began to be called the CIM, the Chern Institute of Mathematics, in 2004. And its purpose exactly is to promote the dialogue between mathematics and physics and within the disciplines of all branches of mathematics. And I think, the mural is the cover page of this the Nankai Symposium, which we organized and which Springer is publishing later this year, I believe.
Yeah, this is a book resulted from the Nankai Symposium on Mathematical Dialogues last year, held in Chen Institute. And I believe this will be published soon, I suppose in October. And you are the main organizer of it. So could you please tell us something about the book and also the symposium?
Yeah, sure. So I joined Nankai in 2010 as a Chuanjiang professor. And so that would allow me to spend 2 months every year in China whilst holding my major appointments in the UK. So when I joined their director of the theoretical physics division, Professor Mo Lingge, who is a very senior and very good friend of mine, and also the director of the Chern Institute itself, Professor Bai Chenming, they told me of a very interesting story, which is that when Professor Chern passed away in 2004, and in fact, Professor Chern's grave is in front of the Chern Institute. He's actually buried in front of the Institute. So he said when Professor Chern passed away, he really wanted a new series of conferences, which is different from other series. Because, you know, usually a conference series in mathematics and physics are very topical. You know, you want to go very deep in this particular area or that. But Professor Chern, and of course also Professor Yang, are very much into dialogue. So they wanted to create a new symposium series where you promote dialogues between different fields. So Professor Ge asked me, you know, because you know, he sees me as somebody who is connected, so as we discussed before, in different fields and also in different countries, he asked me whether I could get experts from completely different areas and to just to have this dialogue. So I mean, it's a role which I took with great pleasure and great honor, because this was sort of a wish of Professor Chern. So I said absolutely. So in 2016, we had the first in-person conference, which we now call the Nankai Symposium of Mathematical Dialogues, and that one was in person in 2016, and about 80 to 100 people came, and from all over the world, from different branches of mathematical physics, from number theory to quantum field theory, and we all had a great time, and just telling people about what we work on. So, and of course, it was decided that we have to have this continue with this. So the second one in the series was planned for 2019. And of course, then COVID happened. It couldn't be held in person anymore. So first of all, it was delayed and it became an online version. But it became a very fortuitous delay because the actual symposium, the second one in the series, happened in 2021. And that coincided with the 110th anniversary of the birth of Professor Chern. And so to celebrate that, we got about 100 experts from even wider audience of expertise, just telling others about, what mathematical problems that excites them. People came from number theory to mathematical biology to even philosophy. And so that was very successful. And one of the highlights of this particular one was that my friend and colleague at Oxford, Professor Sir Roger Penrose, just got the Nobel Prize in 2021. So, of course, I invited him to give the special public lecture in honor of Chern's 110th birthday. So Professor Penrose gave the public lecture, and it was attended by hundreds of people online. And what's interesting is that he gave this lecture on his own 90th birthday in celebration of this 110th birthday of Chern. And he began by saying, Chern, of course, has been a childhood hero of his. So it's a perfect timing. So that's 2021. And hence, I thought it was great. And that's when, Daniel, when you contacted me about doing the proceedings, I thought it would be a great proceeding series for such a unique event in 2021. So that's, in fact, for the cover of the proceedings of this symposium, we chose exactly as that particular mural of Professor Chern and Professor Yang in dialogue. And interestingly, again, it's even more part of the story, is that Professor Yang himself this year is celebrating his 100th birthday. So Professor Yan is still very healthy and very, very much still going. And Professor Ge and I are editing a special volume. So we invited various, you know, Nobel Prize winners and Fields medalists to celebrate the 100th birthday of Professor Yang this year. And and that is also to be published with Springer later this year.
Really interesting. It's also my first time to learn these stories behind the symposium. And I think a lot of coincidences create this success of symposium and also the book. I really look forward to the publication of the
Yeah,
book.
Me too. Well, actually, before speaking of coincidence, because, you know, my whole life is about doing different coincidences in mathematics. You know, for me personally, 2021 was also special because that was the year that, you know, I've been recruited to spend the majority of my time now at the London Institute for Mathematical Physics, which is in the historical Royal Institution. And that's where actually most of the Well, actually, because it's the only independent research institute for mathematics in the UK and modeled after the IIS Princeton, and it's situated in the place where Michael Faraday made his great discoveries in the 19th century, and unlike universities, the London Institute remained completely open throughout the entire pandemic, and that's why we were able to organize the Nankai Symposium in person with the team there, and we were meeting every day. And ran this 2-week long conference online, just getting different experts. So, but we were having this, you know, with Chern, with Penrose, and under the auspices of Young, and we were having it physically located at the place of Faraday and Davy and all these people. So it was 2021 was a very special year in all respects.
Okay, you talk about you joined Nankai at 2010, and you carry out some maybe courses or activities 2 months per year in China.
Yes.
So I'm curious about what is your motivation at that time for this return?
My motivation is completely personal and also, of course, intellectual. But it's again, a perfect, perfect coincidence. So it turns out that in just before 2010, my parents actually moved back to Tianjin, to China. And that reason was because my mother's retired, but my father was a professor at the University of Hong Kong and jointly a professor at the University of Oregon in the States. And when he retired from these roles, he doesn't want to retire. You know, he's like me. You know, we want to. Oh, I'm like him. We're both complete workaholics, and he wanted to continue to do his work. So he's a research a medic. He's a professor of surgery, and then it just so happens one of the world's leading heart hospitals is in Tianjin, the Binghai Heart Hospital. So they appointed him as the vice president of that hospital. So he went back to China after so many years abroad. So it became the perfect opportunity for me to go see my parents and, you know, and bring my wife and kids to, you know, to see the grandparents. So when I got the Changjiang professorship, it was a natural place to put that in Nankai, and especially with the School of Physics in Nankai and with the Chern Institute. So again, it's a perfect coincidence that because, and of course, Chern and Yan are my heroes. So everything happened perfectly.
Yeah. Everything works well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Yan. Thank you for sharing this very interesting experience.
Of course. Pleasure.
Well, our interview is about to end, so let's move on to several questions which are more on the fun side.
Yes.
Okay, so how do you usually entertain yourself?
I'm a big fan of classical music. I play the violin and since a child, so I still play. And I used to also sing very in an English choir, and that's also it's a very Oxford and Cambridge thing to do. So I used to sing tenor in the chapel choirs of St. Catherine's College in Cambridge and then Merton College in Oxford. And so I think other than mathematics, my biggest passion is music, and especially violin and singing.
I see. Have you cultivated any new hobby during the pandemic? Or just work? You
Not
just mentioned you are
let me tell you something.
workaholic.
Oh no, that's not entirely true. I think during the pandemic, because I was at home so much, I spent other than just being with my children, I had more time to get back. I mean, other than working all the time, which is great because you don't have a schedule anymore. Then to get back more seriously into music. And maybe a little bit of gardening just because I was locked up at home, right? So that's a bit of.
Okay. What is your most impressive suggestion received from others?
I think always stay curious. I think many people have told me, I can't even remember who, but from various sources and various senior people, I've always heard to always remain curious and not just about any problem. It's just. Keep an open mind, and you never know where your that curiosity will take you.
Yeah, and you really followed this suggestion. Your great curiosity creates a lot of, I think, new possibilities in developing your research in different subjects and combine them together to find maybe a new interesting case.
Yeah, I hope so, at least. For
Yeah.
me, that's why I can be a workaholic because I'm always playing. I never feel tired because,
Yeah.
why would I ever feel tired with research? Because there's always something curious and fun to do. It's like playing a big game all the time.
Who would you like most to be a graduate student of, regardless of historical barrier?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we would have to be either Henri Poincaré or David Hilbert. And I fluctuate between the two. I think the reason I choose these two is because they are universalists. For them, mathematics is a whole. I think Poincaré was often called the last great universalist because he did everything. He did Lie groups to representations, whatever to and of course Hilbert, of course, as well. I don't understand why Hilbert wasn't called the last great universalist, but I think the two of them. Maybe Vladimir Arnold. Maybe these three. I can't decide. Depending on what day of the week, I will try to decide one of these three people because they saw mathematics as a whole, and that's a very rare thing because people always go, I'm going to be, a analytic number theorist. I'm going to be this, but these three giants really saw mathematics as a whole, and that by looking at mathematics as a whole, it gives you this curiosity-driven view towards what mathematics is.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing your hobbies and your wish to be a graduate student of. And
Yeah, these are great people, right? If I could have a time machine, I would definitely try to be the graduate student of one of these people.
Okay. Now we are at the end of the interview, and thank you so much again for your participant. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great to talk to you about all of these fun things.
Thank you for listening to the Springer Math Podcast. Look out for another episode next month.